Welcome back, Survivor fans. It is season 26. This is episode 4 of the podcast, but we will be talking about episodes 4, 5, and 6 of the season. We had one of our hosts in Cambodia during this time, and we just didn't want to go on solo, so
Chumreef Suar, listeners.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, a little hello in Cambodian for you there.
I'm disappointed I didn't get any more city puns or Asian flavored puns.
Well, on my yeah, that's true. I did go strong with my departure there, and then
it went dark.
Yeah, well, I went dark because this is not the land of Wi-Fi.
Mm.
I mean, we had spots of it there here and there, and we had it in the hotel, but even in the hotel it was.
And you probably did it to do things like contact your wife and loved ones instead of
contact my
Facebook.
Wife, reassure parents who were majorly sweating their kids out from half a world away, which and not without reason. We had a couple kids nearly collapse due to heat exhaustion. Nothing a little water and Gatorade couldn't fix, though. So, but all in all, a good trip and some good culture, lots of elephants and lots of temples.
Nice.
I got to be honest. I mean, I was walking around with a little bit in the back of my mind thinking, like, you could put a Survivor season here.
Like, how often are you in the tropics? You know, you don't get a chance to really sort of play this out in your head.
Yeah, it was.
Figure
I mean,
out how'd you do?
Yeah,
I was hoping. Chris, I was hoping you'd subsist on rice and beans the whole time.
I basically was. I mean, let's be honest. I have a very sensitive system when it comes to digestion. And so, I mean, I'd say between a third and half of my nutrition for the entire trip was white rice.
Yeah.
You know, there was other stuff being offered, but I was... You know, I mean, I was on the preemptive diarrhea meds. I eventually had to go on the reactive, and I wasn't even being adventurous with food. So, yeah, it was. I just got two words for you, my friend: squat toilets.
Yeah.
Wow, that's something different out there.
That's more than I was expecting.
Yeah. But it was a great trip, and
you haven't given me my segue yet. I need something.
Okay, sorry. So I mean, I definitely was looking around, you know, seeing all sorts of different things that could easily be fashioned into hidden immunity idols, into tribal you know, pseudo totems,
yeah.
To be paraded around that maybe in, you know, if their hands are shaped just right, could hold a little bit of rice in case somebody dumps it out.
Right.
There's your segue. Come on.
Thank
I mean,
you.
That was gold right there.
So you had to leave during what some people are calling one of the seminal episodes of the entire series.
I'm impressed. I mean, like, this was that episode. I saw episode 4, the Shamar and Laura departure episode,
yeah,
prior to going on the trip. And then the one episode that was while I was gone, I mean, yeah, this was epic. And I have to say, I waited until today to watch it to give myself a little bit of, you know, you always hate when you get the teaser and you're like, oh man, I can't wait till the next episode. So I was like, I'm just going to wait on this one. So that way I just get to watch them back to back. And watching,
so you don't have to wait on it.
Watching Brandon's episode, I was wowed and in awe, and I was laughing and I was cringing, and I mean this is the thing that I think, you know, keeps this show going. Is I was like, wow, like there are still things happening on this show 26 seasons in that you're kind of like, wow, we haven't seen that one. Like,
yeah,
you'd think you'd seen it all by the time you're 26 deep.
Yeah, I think we really need to emphasize that being left to your own devices in the wild with minimal shelter, minimal food, minimal exposure to your loved ones,
yeah,
will make you crazy.
Like, yeah.
And if you're a little crazy, it'll make you a lot crazy.
Well, right. I mean, that's the thing with Brandon. Brandon has shown himself to be, I'm like, I don't want to be accusatory or paint him too broadly here, but at the very least, less than stable.
You're being kind.
I'm trying to be kind because I don't. I mean, the guy had a moment that let's be honest. I think any number of us could have had out there, especially when put on the wrong side of the line from Philip Shepard. And that's part of it, you know, like part of it is actually the sanity of Brandon in that situation. Like, you know, he's sitting there watching this guy who's cuckoo and like, you know, runs his little, like, you know, third grader playground games of Stealth R Us and like giving people names and you can complete a task and then you'll be in. And I mean, With half a leg of sanity, you watch this and you want to be like, you people are following this guy? Like, I half don't blame him for losing his mind. I mean, the way he handled it is another story.
The thing that gets me is that, like, he's able to get himself worked up into a lather. And this is the thing I noticed. I rewatched it today before the other one. And he's able to work himself up into a lather just in his own confessional. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, he's been in a confessional for maybe 45 minutes to an hour, and he's still able to generate this rage that he, you know, is fueled by Philip's ridiculousness. But, you know, a lot of people handle Phil by sort of, like, the way that Corinne handled him in this episode. It's like, yeah, you know, he's really annoying, but he also is the means to an end.
Right.
And for that reason, I will tolerate it. And I don't understand how Brandon can't see it for what it is, which is why would you ever let someone like that push you off of your game?
The difference is that for Corinne, he is a means to an end, and for Brandon, he's not the means to an end. He's the obstacle to his end, you know. And he seems to be the Pied Piper amongst all these other people because everybody does just sort of, you know, let him go on and not really bother, you know, engaging in trying to deconstruct this fantasy land that Philip, you know, is continually polishing. And so, you know, Brandon sees this, like I said, this Pied Piper, and he wants to tear that down. And, you know, unfortunately for Brandon, you know, I think this is where Brandon shows his youth, I think, is, you know, if Brandon was 10 years older, I think he is much more well-equipped to figure out a way to break this down in a constructive way for his own game rather than just going Waco on the camp and on his own game. I mean, you know, I am the author of my demise or whatever.
Right.
That's a degree of lunacy there because it's, you know, like, anybody can be the author of their own demise.
Right.
Like,
it takes a significant more strength to be the author of your own success.
Exactly. Well, and he even said at one point, like, I forget how, like, oh, I didn't go down without a fight or something like that. But it's like, that's revisionist history there. I mean, there was a fight, but your fight was just like, it was just you picking a fight with Phil, not you fighting in the game.
Yeah.
And that's,
you know,
those are two very different things.
At the beginning of this episode, when they were kind of like trying to analyze what had happened at the challenge and Brandon's meltdown, like, Philip did mention that, like, you know, there were no screaming fights between him and Brandon, that, like, he essentially chalked it all up to being inside Brandon's head. And I have to say, like, I really strongly believe that this is a big construct of Brandon. Like, Philip didn't really treat Brandon any differently than he would have anyone else. It's not like he went specifically after him. He just kind of was doing this little thing he was doing with Stealth R Us. It's like, you know, you're middle management, you don't need to know. And it wasn't about Brandon. It was about people who are in and people who aren't.
Well,
you know,
right.
What I'm saying?
But the difference is everybody else was in. I mean, I guess maybe Eric and Brenda may not have been, but like,
I feel like we didn't see.
I don't know, and maybe he
Here's
is treating
the crazy
the same
thing, Chris.
Way. I don't think he was doing that middle management stuff. Like he was. I mean, he was subversively putting Brandon down in those conversations.
Yeah, but Brandon kept trying to like kiss up to him, and it was like this is where it got to him. I think if Brandon plays it a little more straight instead of just trying to suck up, he doesn't get patted on the head,
perhaps.
You know, and put down as much as Philip. Like, here's the thing: rewatching it again today, Brandon like volunteers himself to go home.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And all of a sudden, when he finds out that Philip wants to, like, you know, be taking credit for this, all of a sudden now he's got to make a big show of it and, like, go
well,
down
I mean,
in the way
yeah,
he did.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was all precipitated by yet another episode of Brandon playing the waffle game, you know?
Right.
For lack of a better word, and again, I don't want to get into trying to diagnose the guy, but he seems bipolar. For nothing else, for lack of a better term.
We're not,
you know,
psychologists.
He starts out with his, like, I can't believe I left behind my family and my kids to do this, and I should go home, and I'm not going to quit, but, like, if we end up going to tribal council, vote me out. And then, you know, seemingly less than 24 hours later, perhaps even the same day, is, you know, oh, you know, I've decided I'm going to play for now, you know, I'm going to play for my family now. I have, you know, and it's the constant ping pong.
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting, and Brandon seems incapable of doing this internally, and then just giving the fun. I mean, because we all do this, right? I mean, like, what he's going through is not unique. What he's going through is not strange or weird. It's that he's incapable of reasoning it out on his own,
or more importantly, reasoning it out
with one person, rather than doing it publicly for the whole tribe to witness and bouncing back and forth publicly.
Or reasoning this before you even came onto the show.
Well, right,
to
yeah, that
show.
Too. Yeah,
that would have been even better.
Well, right, and that's the, and again, this is where Brandon shows his age. I think. I mean, what is he now? 23, 24, something like that.
Yeah, mid 20s.
He's already talked about how he had a real rough time the first go around, and half of that, I'm sure, is due to Russell and Russell's shadow and Russell's own words at their reunion show, where he basically disowned him.
Yeah.
But you know, you're right. He should, considering what transpired in that first go around, this should have been a much more serious discussion and thought process long before he left the States. But again, I think that's his age there, and he's just sort of like, you know, he's generally a short-sighted guy. He thought, oh, I didn't like the way things went the first time I played.
Yes.
I'm getting this new opportunity. I'm going. Right. You know, I think it was as simple as that.
Right.
And, you know, he really only thinks things through as they are brought to a head, and he needs to.
I think you're giving him too much credit in just saying it's simple and maturity. I think he genuinely has some problems in I think a more level-headed 24-ish person would have been able to reason a lot of stuff out.
True.
Without this drama. So don't give him too much credit. I just don't want to let him off the hook. I think he's genuinely got some issues, and I don't think this was the right thing for him to agree to come back on the show without having worked out a lot of his personal stuff beforehand.
Yeah. No, definitely.
All right, let's move on to the more current
topic. I do want to add one other thing about that episode. This is totally not off the beaten path, but I don't know if you noticed, and Stacey's going to give me a real hard time because it comes up in the podcast, but the music was in general very different during that episode.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah.
You noticed as well?
Okay. Yeah.
And it was funny because the whole time I was kind of like, this just feels weird. Like, have I just been away from the show too long or what's going
on?
Like the music after the reward challenge
was the kind of
music you hear at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is just awkward. And I guess it sort of made sense because it was the last moment of the episode that was truly episodic, that happens every week, you know, the challenge. And then after that, it was, you know, everything.
How do you feel about how it was handled with Jeff allowing it to all go down in front of the other tribe and
the vote
happening out loud?
I was a little surprised about. I think... You know, I think he probably was taking the temperature of things continually there,
right?
And felt very confident that he was going to get an 8-1 vote against Brandon, and that there was going to be no secret about that, and thus there was no need to worry about the secrecy of the vote. I mean, because that was the first thing that occurred to me was, if forget about the
integrity of the vote.
Yeah, forget about the other tribe witnessing it. It's the being able to vote in secret, not publicly. But I think, like I said, I think it was pretty obvious there. On the other hand, it's while everybody did vote that way, I wonder if there would have been different votes had they been private. You know, because of the fact that you're voting publicly, you cannot do anything but vote for Brandon in that situation.
You're right.
Especially if you are more than say the fourth person to vote. Once the momentum is there, you just fall in line with them, and there is absolutely no value in voting anywhere else.
Right.
Who knows? There may have been a vote or two thrown Phillips' way. Maybe just as a sort of a warning shot or something, like, dude, lighten up or whatever. Because regardless of what transpired prior to the interesting immunity challenge / tribal council, Phillip was no holds barred once it started. I mean, he did not hold back, and he definitely went after Brandon. I wouldn't have been totally surprised if, like,
Chris, you had a meltdown when, like, the words that are coming out of Phillip's mouth seem to be kind of sensible in retrospect.
I don't know. I wasn't watching it thinking, like, wow, Phillip looks like the high ground here. Like, Phillip to me, because like I said, I've always felt like Phillip, especially towards Brandon, was always talking down. And you may be right, Brandon may have put himself in that position in the first place. But regardless, he was still putting him down. And it always, to me, felt like that's where Phillip wanted to go with it. Maybe it's because he saw Brandon as the major alpha threat to him, and so that's why he felt the need to do it to him and not to others around camp. The only other alpha threat that he'd really have would be Brandon. Would be Malcolm. But Malcolm is a very amenable, soft-spoken guy.
Yeah,
or is at least good at being soft-spoken in spots where he needs to be.
Right.
And thus, Phillip might not feel threatened by him. I didn't feel like Phillip looked that great there, because he's just shouting at a guy who's clearly having one of the more forgettable moments of his life, and he's shouting at him, "You're pathetic," and that makes you know better. I feel like, I feel like that's what was going through. It was amazing to me to witness the emotion on Andrea's face and on Dawn's face while this all transpired. Like, I was kind of surprised, and then I realized, like, I think, especially the two of them, like Dawn having played a season with Brandon, and Andrea seemed to be bonding with him a little bit this year. They're witnessing a friend have what amounts to essentially some sort of a nervous breakdown here. And that's difficult to do, and you've got Phillip, kicking sand on him.
I don't know. I don't feel as openly sympathetic towards this as you do. Just because, if he was actually making a stand about, not laying down and being taken out and being the author of his own demise and being genuine about it, he shouldn't have made it as much about Phillip. It should have really been about,
"Oh, no,
I'm going to go out on my terms." But whenever it became time to, have a moment or, really kind of put a period on the sentence, it was always ending with, "Phillip, you're a bee." Or,
taking
this cheap shot, just going super low, and I'm just like...
Oh, I'm not defending...
Any point
I'm
that
not...
you're trying to make is just completely muted by the fact that you're just being a complete immature jerk right now.
Yes.
Just because you feel like you're on the wrong side of who's got the power and who's getting the credit in the alliance.
Oh, no,
To be fair to Phillip, he did stick, keep that tribe in that challenge. He's okay taking the credit for that. I know they focused on Brandon, and that allowed him to hang around longer, but...
Exactly.
Given that Brandon went out first and that there was more time, even more time to spend on him, he did a damn good job.
He did, but I don't know. That I sort of, we really have no idea what it looked like. That's a short edit there. I kind of agree with you that it seemed like they were ganging up on Brandon early because they wanted to get him out of the way.
Yeah. You know why they lost? And there's a couple reasons. One, they should have never not put Reynolds and Eddie on the ropes. That should have been Reynolds and Eddie on the ropes.
Yes, period. I agree.
Second, Sherry failed at filling up.
Oh my goodness. Sherry failed dramatically.
What's funny is that, like, Philip kept shouting things anytime she would go to shoot.
It was great. I mean,
it was really entertaining.
As Looney Tunes as Philip can be, like, there was a method to that madness.
You know, when he's playing basketball in the gym, he's the guy that's yelling something when your shot goes up.
Oh,
you know?
God, that's so annoying.
He's
so
that guy.
Bush League. It's so Bush League.
You know he's that guy.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. I feel like Survivor, like, it's kind of, like I said before, I think you feel like it's kind of no holds barred. Like, that's, I don't feel like that's cheesy in Survivor, but on the court, that feels super cheesy to me. Like, really, you can't play any defense, so you're going to yell at me as I take a shot? Like, because that's really what's going to go on, right? Because Philip can't move as fast as everybody else on the court.
Right, yeah. You know it. He's not going to go up and challenge a shot. He's going to yell, shot!
Right, exactly. And then he's going to double dribble and be all in your face.
Right, yeah. He's going to give you Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. You won't
Larry
know what's
Bird,
coming.
Magic Johnson. He's going to double dribble and dunk in your face.
Right.
Oh, man.
Good times.
You know, let's touch quickly on Shamar's and Laura's departure.
Yeah, my comment with Shamar is always like, I mean, yeah, his eye was kind of gruesome, but like, I'm sitting there watching it with my roommate, and like, you know, the nurse is tending to him, and she's like, Jeff, I think I want to pull Shamar out of the game. And
good
he's
accent,
like,
though.
And you know, Shamar's like, no. Don't pull me out of this game.
No. Yeah, I felt the
I
same way.
I want to stay.
This was the excuse that Shamar was waiting for. And I'm not saying that he crutched it more than he should have or anything like that. Clearly, this guy's eye was in bad shape.
It was in bad shape.
But like this was Shamar's Hail Mary. Like his Hail Mary wasn't to make it to the end. His Hail Mary was to get out without having to be a quitter.
Right.
Because I'm sure that there was a degree that there was like, you know, I'm a Marine. Marines don't quit. And like, you know, I'm sure that perhaps the last leg he was standing on was like, I'm a Marine. Marines don't quit.
Yeah.
And that may have been the only thing keeping him from just walking out of the game.
Sure.
Because he seemed to be just mentally defeated.
Yeah.
And this was what he was looking for, was an opportunity to exit the game without having to wait for his tribe to vote him out, because Sherry wasn't going to let that happen, and he got his way, which is, I mean, really ultimately, I feel like everybody wins. I was uncomfortable watching when he was around. I mean, it's not even like Philip, like with his belittling stealth R us baloney, like he was just so socially awkward.
Yeah,
and I mean, I don't know if we touched on it, you know, our mutual friend Jonas pointed out something that may have been a major factor in it, and that's that he's in a situation where he doesn't have someone that he feels directly responsible to, i.e. a, you know, lieutenant or captain or whatever, like he does in
Jonas'
the Marines.
Military theory.
Yeah, his military theory, which I think holds a lot of water, is like, you know, like part of, I think a lot of us are sitting there watching this guy who's a Marine thinking like, what the heck is going on? Like, this is not the image of a Marine we have, you know. Was it Matt or Mike from the Rob and Russell season? I can't remember the guy's name. Who was ex-military, and he was very much the image of the, if not a Marine, then of the military man.
Not
no,
Grant.
it wasn't Grant. Grant was the football player. It was Matt or Mike. I can't remember his name.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
Yes,
and he was, like, super solid in those challenges.
Yeah, exactly. He was the one who, like, he
Is
went...
the tool guy? Is this guy you kept calling a tool?
He was, yeah, he was the guy I was calling, the craftsman tool of the week. He was the one who commented on Ralph's man sweater or whatever and was, like,
right. Yes.
Like, just, it seemed to enjoy making those comments a little too
much. Right.
I feel like he very much embodied the image that I think a viewer would have or expect of an ex-military contestant. And Shamar, I feel like, was like the opposite. You know, he laid around camp. He wasn't a doer. He was like, he was very like, look at me in every opportunity, rather than, you know, whatever it takes to get the job done for the team. And I think Jonas may be right. I think it may be the lack of a of a no choice leadership situation,
right,
where you know you've got a guy you report to, and if you don't report to, right? Yeah, he needs that. He needs that structure. Yeah. And some people, or perhaps to be fair to Shamar, not so much that he, you know, innately needs that structure, but has been a part of the military long enough that he's been conditioned to need that structure. Almost akin to. Who was it? Brooks from Shawshank's Redemption, you know, like...
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. Holy crap.
Like, the walls protect... The walls aren't keeping you in. The walls are protecting you from the outside world, sort of thing.
Yeah.
You get used to that way of life, and you really can't adapt to anything else.
Nice.
Especially once you get to be of a certain
age. Let's talk about Laura. What do you think about the decision to vote one of their own?
That was smart. I mean, obviously now it may end up hurting them in the end.
It looks bad now, but at the time it was smart.
But, yes, it was definitely the way to go at that time. I mean, they were losing challenges left and right. They had lost Shamar, who, if nothing else, could be an ox in a challenge,
right?
Particularly in the one that's coming up next week, which is a classic favorite of mine. The water track with
all kinds of good challenges back.
I love
that
challenge.
The one I was talking about in our episode 3 podcast about
which one was that?
Put everyone on a little pedestal.
Oh yeah, you're right. That's right. I forgot.
And Shamar thought they won.
Oh, the poor guy couldn't catch a break.
No.
Well, he did catch a break though with the eye thing, I guess.
Right. but in order to catch a break, he
caught
had,
a break
like,
by
severely
like scratching his cornea.
Yeah, that's what it took.
They made that was the right move there. She clearly was the weakest player in that tribe.
They're losing challenges due to bad strategy. I really do. Like, their challenge in the pedestal thing was to have Shamar take up the whole pedestal.
Yeah.
That was their strategy.
That was so strange. Although, was that their strategy or was that his strategy?
I have no idea.
I don't recall. But you're totally right. I mean,
their strategy
has just
been
so
bad.
Weird. We'll get Shamar up there. Like, Shamar should certainly be at the center. Because he's the most difficult to counterbalance and to keep in place anywhere else than directly above the center of gravity.
But then he would take up the most area. I feel like if you can put him on an edge, then most
of his mass
can kind of hang out.
No, but how do you counterbalance that?
I don't know.
You have people
hanging off of him.
He could be like they had the concept right in that he should be the anchor in the middle.
And then everyone just hangs on to him.
Yeah, and everyone hangs on to him because he could hang a couple people off of him, especially if you put them on opposite sides at the same time.
Sure,
he could handle that well.
Sure.
But not by like going into
making
the fetal
him a lump
position
on the pedestal.
Yeah, he definitely does not need to curl up like a baby on the pedestal.
That made no sense.
Yeah, that was definitely queer. Yeah, Laura was the right move. She was holding them back. She was in every swimming challenge. She was the last one back, wasn't she?
Yes.
I mean, so.
And in the challenges where they get to sit out some weak links, and Brenda has to play every one, like it was just going to snowball out of control.
Who had to play everyone?
The fans. They had to play everyone in a challenge while the favorites got to sit some.
Oh.
And kind of get a combination.
I think you said Brenda had to play everyone or something.
No.
So yeah, that was the right call, and it worked out nicely for them, sort of, in that, Reynolds' idol got flushed out,
right.
And he got a little bit of like, you know, jokes on me because he obviously didn't need to have played it. Of course, ultimately it didn't matter because he went and found it 10 minutes later anyway.
What a joke! And he's like sitting there laughing his butt off, and he's like, "This is how you play Survivor," and I just feel like there are past champions who would just sort of, you know, roll in their non-existent,
their future graves.
Figurative graves.
Not their literal graves. Let me tell you.
Not their literal graves. I got a
lesson in misuse of the word literally on my trip with 16 high schoolers. I'll tell you that much. Oh, my goodness. Oh, it was all I could do to bite my tongue and not just like lose it with them every time they used the word literally in clearly hyperbolic situations.
There's like the t-shirt that says like, people's use of the word literally has me figuratively insane or something like that.
Yeah, great. It was. Ugh. I'm glad to be back in the land of the
those of us who honor the language.
The capable, grammatically and verbally capable.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good to have you back.
Thanks.
So
shall we talk about the actual episode from this week
the
now?
Episode at hand. You know, you know, our listeners have waited 30 long minutes patiently.
Yes.
So maybe we should reward them with talking about the actual episode at hand. But, you know, of course, you know, CBS presages the tribal switch by having Reynolds say something about how nothing is shifting right now, so they're just going to.
Right, yeah. That was a nice. That was. I mean, of course, we knew. I think we knew it was coming from the. From the tease, from the previous episode, mm-hmm. that things were about to shift. Of course, they made it sound like Philip and Corinne were going to end up on opposite episodes, which they, of course, did not.
No.
But what do you think about these new tribes?
It's out of control. I mean, I kind of type notes for the podcast while we're watching, and just like I would type these names in for the Orange Tribe, and I was like. Holy God! Like,
oh yeah,
I couldn't believe the cast is on that tide. Like,
it's youth stack. And strength and Sherry.
But even Sherry,
Sherry's strong for her age, but she's probably the weak link of that tribe, right? I mean,
yes, she is the weak link of that tribe. But I think
because who are the other women? It's
I think Sherry could have hung with Hope and Allie, and I think generally we saw that. But like, it's not like Hope and Allie were so much better than she was.
Well, that was Hope and Allie though. I feel like Brenda and Andrea are stronger.
Yes. But they're more athletic. Like Brenda was a cheerleader. Andrea has like a country girl background where she did like farming tasks. I don't know.
Right.
Allie and Hope are city girls.
Right.
Like one of them is a model.
And then what's the other? And then the other tribe is like Age and Cochran, I think. Right, it's Philip.
So the aged ones would be Dawn and Philip
and Corinne,
Michael, and Corinne.
Matt. Oh, and then they do have Julia, but she
Julia
doesn't count because she's not
very
really on this
slight.
Season.
She's very slight.
Well, and she's not really on this season.
No,
I thought for sure she was going to get voted out, and I was ready to say. Actually, I wasn't ready to say. I said it to Stacey. I was like, she's going to go out with like easily the least amount of airtime. For somebody who lasted more than three episodes,
I did say that she was aware of her lack of presence, right? On the last time,
right? Yeah, she tweeted something about like, "Hey, I just finally made an episode or something." Yeah,
she's taking it well. She understands that she's not lived up to her end of the bargain.
Well, I had thought originally that her lack of FaceTime was an indication that she would become a player later on in the game. Mm. And that they wouldn't edit it in such a way that a cast member would end up being so passingly a member of the season. And that's obviously still a possibility because she's still around.
Who was the tall African American guy from last year?
Artist.
Didn't say anything? Artist. Same thing.
But he went deep. I mean, he went deep and he became a bit of a player. I mean, he wasn't a player, but he became a bit of a. He was a participant. He was around, and he was visible, perhaps for no other reason than because
I don't know.
There was
his whole existence was just to be part of a number with Abby and
Pete. Yeah,
that's it.
That's true.
Whatever. Well, I'm ready to move on.
She may end up being the same sort of situation.
I really like
Cochran's analysis in this. I guess I skipped the challenge, but. I mean, what was that challenge? Any surprise that they won? I mean,
no, I didn't realize we were skipping all the way to the challenge. I was going to talk about like the little feeling out periods because there was some good stuff going on.
Oh, we could talk about it. Yeah, let's talk.
Yeah,
about
yeah. So Eddie and Reynolds, like, they're so short on
social games.
Thing one and thing two, click and clack. I don't what are we going to use for them? Like they're repeating every mistake.
Oh,
Eddie's
I know.
Once again, talking about being one of the beautiful people. And
yes!
How great everything is.
I know. I loved it. I heard it. And I was like, Eddie, did you not realize that this is what dug you in a hole the first time? I mean,
and Reynolds
fortunately
trying to get
for
on the
him,
side
the beautiful of... people is 6 out of 7 on his tribe right now. But
Reynolds working on a 3-4 group right now, and he can't figure out that like he needs to not reduce the number on his side of the alliance, not increase like He needs more people, the majority, on his side.
I don't know. I think he's... I think he's playing a little bit of a Sandra Diaz game. You know, a sort of, as long as it's not me, I've got an idol, as long as it's not me for now kind of thing. You know, and if I can make the merge, then we can figure stuff out from there. Because the game will change. You know, the game will become less about winning
tribal immunity.
Winning tribal immunity, yeah. And he's right to do so, because she was doing the exact same thing to them. You know, like, it, because if she's the first one to spin it on them, and she gets to everybody, then they're the ones who are going to go. And they're on a tribe that can afford to lose a little bit of muscle. So I don't necessarily hate his play of trying to get rid of her.
I hate who it was to.
What?
If they had any idea who Eric was or how he's playing his game this time, they wouldn't just be like...
It wasn't just Eric. It was to Eric and Malcolm, wasn't it?
I'm
pretty sure it was Eric and Malcolm. I think the four favorites were split up, and then everybody on that tribe was split up by gender.
Yeah, that's
right. All the girls were together and all the guys were together.
That's right.
Because Malcolm later on comes back to Andrea and is talking about what just transpired.
Right. You're right.
So, I think Reynolds' play there is okay. But Eddie is falling quickly into the same downward spiral that he did the first time. And they're definitely short on the game. Although
I just want to see some depth. I just want to see them try something else instead of
this
meathead approach they've been doing.
I think what I see happening, and I was thinking this before I even saw the tease from last week, I see Malcolm trying to make a Beefcake alliance. I think he's going to try to make an Abercrombie alliance.
Like he's going to pull in Andrea and Brenda and the three of them?
Oh, I wasn't even talking about them. I was talking about Eddie and
three of them.
Yeah, I think the three of them would be the main alliance, because I think that's his strategy. That's his modification to last season's strategy. So he wants to make a move a little bit earlier. Although I think he's going too early if he does it in the next episode. But he wants to make a move a little bit earlier, and he wants to set himself up with people that are going to be that are not going to turn on him, because those guys aren't going to turn on him, and are more likely to be ousted before him if he ends up on the wrong side of a merge. You know, I think it's a good play. I think it might be happening a little on the early side, but I think it's the smart play, because he was, you know, it puts him in the company of a bunch of people who sort of all look alike. You know, sort of all are the same, seem like the same person.
Yeah, but he could talk his way to it.
Exactly, yeah. And he can talk his way out of being the one they pick to get rid of out of those three.
Yeah.
So I think it's a smart play. I think it's coming a little early if it really does happen next week.
Well, I don't think he should press it until he's forced to. Like, until they lose a challenge, which they may never.
Right.
I don't see why this move needs to be made at this point.
Right. Well, and even then, I think the right thing to do is to get rid of Sherry first anyway. Because, A, it maintains your physical
advantage.
Dominance,
yeah.
and
your fans versus favorites.
Exactly, and it maintains advantage. The fans versus favorites advantage. Like, you don't want to make that flip without being, like, what you want to do is make that flip, bring probably Andrea and Brenda with you, and, you know, make that your sort of five. So that you've got plenty of, you know, you've got some wiggle room in case one of them isn't actually coming along for the ride.
Yeah.
You know, and if you get rid of Sherry first, then that leaves only Eric there. So even if you don't get Brenda, even if both Brenda and Andrea aren't along for the ride, then you're in a 3-3 situation, and your side is holding two idols. So, I think that's the right play there. if it needs to go there, which I don't see that tribe losing more than one immunity challenge pre-merge.
I have to think the producers are kind of pissed about the 4 versus 3 of faves versus fans on both
sides. Both sides. Well, I mean, that's the risk.
I feel like it galvanizes those favorite alliances, because it's like if they deviate at all, they've given the upper hand to a group they should have had the upper hand on. But, like, you know, if it had broke 4-3 with fans over favorites on one side and then 5-2
right
on the other, I think that 5-2 tribe, there's no guarantee that those two are going home. It's like you could find
right,
you
it's know, the Pareto efficiency,
a core of two on that five, you know, favorite group to switch over and go 4-3 against the others.
Yeah,
but it's not going to happen this way.
It's too close to balance to be able for there to actually be cracks that start to show.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
It's unfortunate.
Well, but I guess that's why they do the eggs there and not
right.
just a regular back and forth pick where
right.
you know, like usually when they do those picks, it's always you have to pick someone. The last person picks the next player, and it's from mm-hmm. the opposite tribe, so that you end mm-hmm. up with balance. But usually, I guess they only do that in a situation where they know they're going to end up with, you know, even splits of
mm-hmm.
of previous tribes. So
yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the amount of monkey grooming that we got to see in this episode?
We saw a decent amount of it. We also saw a lot of your, I forget what they're called.
The Tarsiers?
Tarsiers, yeah.
Yeah.
There
was a tweet earlier from, I think it was Allie?
Allie who?
Allie of, you know, Allie and Hope fame.
Oh, from earlier this season, Vamo. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow, you're plugged in. You're plugged in.
No, I'm totally plugged
everybody.
In. I'm the social media part of this group. Okay. So at Allie Pohevitz wrote,
okay.
"I think tonight I'll cheer for one of the giant bug-eyed animals that weren't really there." # Survivor.
So were those guys never? They never really saw any of those Tarsiers?
Well, I have a simple biological explanation. So why would a animal have gigantically large eyes?
Let's see. It's a survival of the fittest thing. It's probably a night animal.
Yes, that's why you wouldn't see it, because it's not nocturnal, so it's only around at night.
Well, but that's not true. All these shots
that
we see are always in the daytime, right? Those aren't night vision shots.
No, but some of them are. Some of them are. They're not all daytime shots, but they'd be harder to find, especially because they're all dark brown and stuff. But
that's
she did say that those little crabs with, like, the one big claw.
Yeah.
She said that they would accompany them to every challenge. Like, they would be along the beach and just kind of be like...
yeah. They'd line the way, like, waving, like a parade of heroes or something.
Waving their claw at them, you know, the one big claw.
That's awesome.
And
it's
supposed to be, like, a threatening display, but because they're so little, it's kind of cute.
Right. It feels very, like a video game or something like that. Like, some video game where you're, like, you know, some sort of medieval times kind of thing where you're competing in some sort of classic joust or whatever, and then after you win, there's some sort of parade of honor for you, and everybody waves, and there's this little, you know, just this line of crabs just waving at you as you go, you know, cheering the heroes on as they head towards their next big challenge.
Before we get to, I guess, the challenge or whatever, I don't know, I guess, I don't even know how far we're jumping ahead, but you know, Corinne is talking to Dawn about Philip's ridiculous adventure to try to find a flipper when he doesn't need one.
Yeah.
And Dawn mentions something about how he can't be left alone, and I immediately had flashbacks. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
The Boston Rob buddy system that, like, everyone had a buddy. And the And the buddies kept each other accountable. There was no sneaking away. It was like...
Right.
Everyone had a buddy, and that's
that's
totally a Boston Rob rule that Philip missed.
Yeah.
Everyone should have a buddy.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know what he's doing there. And then my favorite is later on when they're and this is post challenge, but whatever.
Let's summarize the challenge. The stronger team destroyed the weaker team.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. They lapped them with the cubes. They did. I don't think they had a single. I don't think the Bacall had a single cube in
set.
The right spot.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Correct.
Because Philip refused to place anything anywhere unless they were absolutely certain that that's where it goes.
Well, they did leave Philip to go a third time, and that was great. When he stood there, he's like, who's going, guys? Why isn't someone going?
Yeah, like, that was ridiculous. Because why would he go first off, fine, have him go a third time. But at least space them out, like have them go all the odds or all the evens or something like that, or like 1, 3, and 6, not 1, 4, and 5. That's just colossal stupidity. Not to mention he's the oldest guy out there.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
I do like his proclamation that of next time that if it's upper body related, I got it.
Oh, it's too good.
It's too good. I texted my girlfriend. I was like, I'm going to be really sad when he gets blindsided off of Stealth R Us. It's going to be really sad.
I like how you squeezed in that little shout out right there.
It's news, you know?
That was nice. It was in the flow, but like, I mean, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Thanks.
I see what you did there. So back at camp, I mean, Philip starts back in with the Stealth R Us and Matt. What are their names? Matt and Mike? Is that their
Matt
names?
And Mike, or yeah, as Matt Corinne Mike. Calls it, her gay.
Yeah, the gay.
It's Matt it's and not, the gay, or Matt and a gay.
The gay, a gay. That's so cringeworthy.
It is.
And it's it so. Is. It's the funny part about it is that she's actually trying to use it affectionately. Like, but she enjoys.
He's not affectionate towards her like this.
Well,
no.
Right, no, but I mean, she's trying to use it as like endearingly. She's trying to use it like speaking of them positively. But it's so bad. Like, it's so bad to like. I mean, you would never say that about a black person. Everybody knows I would abandon my alliance for a black. You know, like, are you kidding me? I mean.
No, this would never fly. I think she thinks she has more liberty with those terms than she does.
Yeah, you know what I think it is? My hunch is that she has a lot of gay friends at home.
Yeah.
And this is acceptable within that group.
But you not know, like in this group.
And she is deep enough into this season and, you know, plus having had the experience of the previous season she played, not that I can remember what season she played because I don't think she's a favorite.
Gabon.
Gabon. Was that the Bob Crowley season?
Bob Crowley season.
Oh,
Sugar
okay,
season.
Yeah. I do remember that season because I remember the intro sequence had that great like whatever it was, like I don't know what it was, a chimp or an ape or what, but
gorilla
like,
probably if it's good.
Gorilla or whatever, but it was a great shot of one like, you know, just barking out a big yell in the... I mean, you didn't actually hear it, but you saw it in the intro sequence. Yeah. And it just seemed to fit. I don't know. Plus the name Gabon. It feels
Gabon.
Much more feels powerful, like a primate of some sort. I don't know.
Nice.
Anyway. I think she's been in front of a Survivor camera for long enough that her filter is just completely dropped. And she's
That's good.
Forgotten,
That's a good thing for us.
She's forgotten... Yeah, right. She's forgotten that she's... You know, she's saying things that will be aired on national
like
television.
Her rooting for Julia to be out because she's boring. Like, I want her out because she's boring.
Right.
And I cheered. I was like, good. Like, we should.
And
be
apparently, she
to
has a nasal voice. She doesn't have a nasal voice whatsoever. I had to wait. I wasn't sure because we've only heard her say about.
There you go.
Words,
I was waiting for that.
I had to wait until
like, how
she
do you
said
know?
Something again after the nasal voice comment. But once she did, I was like, no, that's not a nasal voice.
No, the reason Julia needs to go is because she's playing, she's not even playing level 1. Like, she's playing level 0.5.
Right.
You know? She goes to the guy, she's like, you know what would be really great? If they wanted to vote out one of their own.
Yeah.
And then we could just vote with them.
I thought that, too. I couldn't help.
It's so bad.
The only thing I thought was, like, you know, when she said that, I was like, seriously, this is the conversation? But then I realized,
right.
I was like, you know, there's probably a lot of conversation like this that we don't see because it's just, you know, because it's that. It's level zero.
Yeah.
But I, so I kind of was like, I kind of was willing to give her a pass because, I feel like a lot of people say things like that.
No.
That you just don't see because they're not
Yeah, they
interested.
Edit it out because they end up saying something smarter later on.
I guess, maybe. Yeah, that's true. I guess I Yeah. I sort of was thinking that and just didn't want to say it. Yeah. She's something else, man.
She is something else.
I don't know. Anyway, I love how Philip now is trying to get Matt and Mike. You know, he's putting them on this was the strangest, like, initiation I've heard here. So if somebody else comes, I still wasn't even quite sure exactly what the instructions were. If someone else from my alliance comes up to you and tells you to do something, you are to do it.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes. And then
even if you don't have confirmation from me.
When Corinne approaches the two guys, like, they can feel like it's about to happen, and Corinne's
that's
like,
true.
So who are you guys going to vote for? And then Michael's like, who should we vote for?
Well, that was the funny thing there, is I felt like, to be fair, I felt like Michael played that well, because if nothing else, he's feeling out opportunities there. Like, maybe there's
a split.
Waiting
for his instruction, like, this is it, this is the moment.
That's
where
true, it might have been much more simpleton than that, you're right. He may have just been waiting for his instructions.
Just the way it was edited was really good.
Well, but I felt like, I was watching Matt in that shot, and I feel like the look from Matt was like, wait, I thought we knew who we were voting for. I thought we were voting for Julia,
right.
And Matt was still at level one, and I felt like Mike had moved to level two.
I agree.
And that might have been an opportunity. It turned out not to be, but it might have been an opportunity to find a crack in the alliance there. but I love how then they start, you know, the four favorites start talking together, and Philip is like, I feel like if we get them to vote for Julia, we've got them. They're on our side.
And then it's 6-0.
Exactly. I was like, you've got them. For what? What do you need them for? Philip is trying to recruit. Like, Philip is like building a stealth RS that's bigger than the cast of Survivor Karamoan.
I think we got the sound guy, guys. I think we got him.
Are you and I in on, like, is my code name the podcaster? Is that, like... Are you the mouth?
And I'm the moderator.
The moderator?
I mean, like, what? I'm the moderator.
It's hilarious. Like, how many people does he think he needs in his alliance? Like, at what? Like, this is, I mean, I guess ultimately this is how Philip plays the short game and doesn't play the long game, because he doesn't seem to realize that sooner or later, like,
someone's going to have to go home.
Someone from his own alliance, someone from Stealth R Us is going to have to go home, that he's supposedly brought into the fraternity and is going to have to excommunicate. I mean,
well, why put all that work into Julia and then put her name first? Like, it made no sense. What the heck
was he doing? Well, I mean, I think what it was is he was putting that work into Julia early because he wasn't sure what was going to go down. And then ultimately when they lost, I mean, I think he's right that she's the one to get rid of.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot it was
challenge-wise.
There was a difference pre- and post-challenge.
Yeah. But Cochran, on the other hand, I feel like Cochran's analysis was spot on.
Oh, yeah. No, he's always spot on.
Spot on. You've got three people to get rid of. Two of them are tight. You break up the twosome.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, as much as you hate to do it, and actually, I feel like the one to get rid of actually out of that group, if you really can choose, is Michael.
But you know, because
I think Matt's probably brings more strength to challenges, and he's I feel like not a step slower than Mike strategically. So
I don't think it's a critical error, but
it wasn't. I mean, Matt ultimately was his own undoing because he was so transparent about trying to make it clear that he didn't have the idol that was why they voted for him, because they knew it was the safe vote.
Yeah, it was a nice blindside. You know, you always like having a good blindside, you know, the one where they literally at no point thought it was them.
Yeah.
I've always said it's an honor when you're blindsided, because then they say, oh, we tip our cap. Like,
right, that's true.
We felt like we couldn't. We couldn't have you around.
That's not really what the case was here, though.
No, I mean, it's better than.
I guess it was a little bit. It was a little bit that someone they couldn't have around based on the fact that he was a part of that twosome.
Right.
And Julia. What is
Julia?
It? Julia. Okay. I mean, she was like tearing up when she thought she was going to go home, which was kind of funny. Do you think her and Mike will come together? Or do you think they'll try to feast on each other and make it to the marriage?
I think Michael's going home next, and I think someone is going to rescue Julia and make her just a Natalie, someone to bring along.
So that, yeah, and that's why she has an, and that's why we'll start to see her some more is as she becomes a part of a slightly powerful alliance.
I hope she learns how to play. I really do.
Yeah, no kidding, no kidding.
It's not fun.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, where do they find us?
I'm just
defeated. I'm just realizing that how far Julia's going to go, and it's,
yeah.
It bums
well,
me
there's
out.
She's about as useful as our Twitter account.
I'm just going to make a competing account, and I'm just going to start tweeting our stuff out.
I'll find the password.
No, you won't.
You.
No, you
it's
won't.
Or I can at least just request a new one. And
yes, that takes 10 seconds. It really does.
So the Twitter handle is. I think it's Tribal Podcast.
It might be.
And our email address is podcast@tc.vanb.net. And you can find our RSS feed online at tc.vanb.net.
You know what would be great? What would make this podcast better, Chris?
What's that?
If we had a logo or an icon of some kind. If it
I loaded it in with the last couple of episodes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to get picked up in iTunes by the feed. Sadly. So I don't really know how to do that. Sadly, I'm not well versed in creating an RSS feed tailored to iTunes. If there's anybody out there who is,
yes, let's petition the,
we would love to hear from you and get your help. Maybe we should put this plug in at the beginning of the podcast, not at minute 57. yeah, we would love to have your input on how to make it, because I'm just using this easy RSS thing that's built into 1&1's website. There's a plug. Can I get a free month, 1&1.com? Can you get a free month for that plug?
Hey, just so you know, everyone, we're still looking for sponsors. So if you really want
right.
to put a piece of the show, you know, you can have it.
Exactly. Well, what should we say? A dollar per second for your spot, however many seconds you want. Yeah. You want a 30-second spot, $30.
Right. If you want Chris to read it, it'll be a dollar per word. But if you want me to read it, it'll be $5. So
per word now? Yeah, no, per second.
Whatever.
Per second for the spot. I can stretch out your words. I can micro machine man them so that they all fit into like 2 seconds. How's that for your reference from the 80s right there?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Not bad. All right, let's get this thing closed out before we hit the hour mark.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we're sorry for missing the last few weeks, and I hope we made up for it. But until next time, thanks for listening.
Chum replia.